Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Koontzman, toddler expert and the founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little ones' development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I'm just so excited to introduce you all to Dr. Vanessa LaPointe, registered psychologist and parenting educator. Welcome, Dr. Vanessa.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
So happy you can join us. And before we dive in, there's some people who may not be familiar with you and your work. Could you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yes. I'm a mom, and a lot of my work, if you will, as a human being, has been in the trenches with my own children, who are now almost 16 and 19 years of age. And second to that, I'm a psychologist. And so I have been working for roughly 20 years with parents and children. My practice these days is focused primarily on supporting parents so that they can really understand the inner workings of their children and come alongside them in the best possible way.
Well, I'm just so excited that you're here with us today. And we're going to be talking about discipline and toddler development and all of these exciting things. And so as we get started, we know that toddlerhood is really a challenging developmental period, but it's also a really critical developmental period, especially in terms of brain development. So can you tell us a little bit more about what's happening in the toddler brain?
Yeah, the toddler brain is a brain like no other. We used to think, going back plus years, that there were roughly 700 new neural connections being formed every second in the toddler brain. And that was a staggering enough number. But what we know now is that there's closer to 1 million connections being formed every second. And if you consider that those connections toddler brain primarily based on what's going on in the environment around them, it really does become so clear how important it is that we're showing up for that brain in a way that makes sense and in a way that will allow that brain to stay on the path of healthy development.
Awesome. Yeah. Every time I hear that statistic, I like almost fall off my chair. I mean, I remember the first time I read it and I was like, whoa, like it's just so shocking every second. Can you explain a little bit more about what that means? Like how, you know, what's being built in the brain with these neural pathways and connections? Like what does that mean specifically?
So the brain is growing in a very specific kind of way from the bottom up and from the back to the front. And in the bottom of the brain is housed primarily, once you get past all the things that control breathing rate and that kind of stuff, you get into the emotional brain, or sometimes we call it downstairs brain, where the limbic system is housed and all of the emotional circuitry, that pivotal goal of all of us parents of self-regulation. So during the toddler years, that part of the brain is really working to come online. What we know about brain development is that it must proceed in a concrete sequential kind of way. So if you don't have a solid foundation, you will not end up with a solid structure in terms of how the brain is going to go and grow. Toddler years are about creating that solid foundation so that in the teen years and the young adult years, the rest of the brain has a chance to really do its thing in terms of coming online to be a problem-solving kind of brain, a logical thinking kind of brain, a relationship-focused kind of brain, and a brain that's able to handle the ups and downs of life. The foundation of that is laid in the toddler years and primarily via the environment and the experiences that the child's big people are creating for them.
Yes. And so that's actually the next point that I'd love for us to discuss is like, what role do parents and caregivers and the environment, because I think a lot of times when we hear the word environment, we think like, you know, what's happening outside or like our house or how our house is set up, but the environment also includes people. So how does the environment, including people, play a role in shaping development of the brain?
Well, toddlers are master energy readers, which means long before they conquer the world of spoken language, they know the world of energy. And that means that the people in their environment are actually the primary driving force of whether or not the environment around the toddler is working for them and or possibly against them. The idea is that the human brain is the only part of us that can be 100% regulated from the environment. So from outside the person, I can't regulate my toddler's liver, but I can regulate my toddler's brain. And the way that we do that is to show up in a manner that is resonant with what nature intended for growing children. That manner necessarily comes down to relationship. So when we can create an environment that is like oozing compassion and oozing relationship and oozing swagger and all of the things that make children feel safe in our presence, then we are walking across this little brain bridge via that environment into that downstairs brain, that foundation of the brain that we're trying so hard to grow, in a way that's going to allow the child to flex their capacity to be calmed and settled and sorted. And the more that they get to flex that, the more likely those neural connections will be formed that ultimately will create those ingrained pathways for the capacity of self-regulation.
Yes, that relationship, connection, trust, all of these things that create that sense of safety for a young child are really just the fuel for creating that foundation are just so, so very important. And, you know, there might be some parents and caregivers thinking like, oh my goodness, well, this is exciting and scary at the same time. Like, does this mean I have to be a perfect parent? Like, what happens if I yell or if I lose my patience? Or this seems like a lot of pressure, you know? Right. What do you have to say to them if people are thinking like, oh my gosh, what are we talking about here? This is so much.
I already wrecked them.
Right.
You know, nature would never have been fool enough to design a creature so sensitive and so like wreckable that if we were to yell or, you know, not be our best self on a given day, that they would be ruined for life. That would not make sense in the grand scheme of things. So much so that there's actually this concept in the field of child development called the good enough parent. You don't need to be perfect. You just need to be good enough. In fact, there's data that suggests that if a parent like really has their connection game on about 30% of the time, 3-0 and go. You only have to be good enough, like really crushing it 30% of the time. The rest of the time, you're going to be kind of like, you know, maybe falling out of that a little bit, working your way back into it. So you don't need to be perfect. The other piece of that is that it's in those intersections when life happens, like you're having a day as a parent and you just couldn't hang on to yourself and you had some yelly shuts come out your mouth, or you're having a day as a parent and you just couldn't hang on to yourself and something else happened that you know is not aligned with connection-based parenting. It's in those moments when it gets grindy that you get to grow, and also that your child gets to experience a repair. And when children experience repair, it actually plays to cultivation of something called adaptation. And adaptation is the precursor to resilience. So I don't say that as a like, whoo, you can, you know, just go and yell all day and do all the things and have heaps of grace for yourself, because we're all humans. We're all in this together and we're all just trying to put our best foot forward.
Yeah, that's exactly what I always say, is we are all human beings. We are everyone's, your child's a human being, you're a human being, we're humans. And so we're going to experience a full spectrum of emotion. We're going to have ups and downs. We're not going to operate like robots. And so one thing I always like to talk about is this idea of, you know, toddlers really thrive on predictability and consistency. And so what I say is we're not looking to be perfect. We're looking to be predictable. And that's what consistency means to me. It doesn't mean we always have to do the same thing. It's just that it's predictable that more often than not, things are going to happen a certain way. And that creates that sense of safety for little ones.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Not perfect, just predictable.
Yeah, that's how I like to talk about it. So how does brain development impact behavior at this stage? Because today we're talking about discipline that nurtures development. And so, you know, how does the brain impact a toddler's behavior? Because there's a lot of impact there.
Oh, yeah. And so the number one thing I think that kind of throws a wrench into it for us as parents is that we often confuse a child's, a toddler's behavior with intention. They intended to hit. They intended to make life difficult by having the meltdown, that there's some kind of intentionality in the way that they are behaving. Toddlers behave as they do because the brain, in terms of frontal and prefrontal cortex, is not yet fully online. And without frontal and prefrontal cortical functioning in a more mature kind of state, you are unable to experience two things of any kind of intensity at the same time and mix them. And so for a toddler, if you say no to the popsicle, there is no life beyond the no. There is no, oh, well, I guess I can't have a popsicle now, but I know I'll get one later. Or I guess I can't have a popsicle now, and I know my mom wants the best for me. There's no mixing of feelings and emotions and thoughts and ideas around that. There is only one thought. And when that thought takes hold, what happens is that the brain flips its lid. So now we're no longer thinking. We have gone into that limbic system that we're working really hard to develop right now. And so the toddler brain is controlling behavior in the sense that it doesn't have a lot of capacity for internal impulse control, internal thoughtfulness about decisions and all those kinds of things. And we need to hang on to that. That will come. That is going to be the fruit of our labor right now. The more that we can meet our kiddos where they're at, have expectations that are aligned developmentally with their age and stage, and make sure to come alongside those upsets with compassion, we are actually creating the potential for frontal and prefrontal development down the road.
Yeah, I think that it's just so important for toddler parents and caregivers to understand that the brain does have a big impact on behavior, and that toddlers don't have the behaviors that they have because they are, as you said, doing it on purpose, or, you know, like basically they're not able to control themselves. And so if we're expecting them to control themselves and then they're not able to, we might think they're being bad or just not listening, where they actually don't have the skills and development necessary to meet the expectations that we're creating. And so it's just so important to understand that, because when we start to understand the brain development, we can start changing our expectations and meeting children where they're at, and then start nurturing that development while, you know, shifting behavior at the same time.
100%. Once you have eyes that see the child for who they actually are, rather than getting lost in the facade of the behaviors, you are 95% of the way there.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. So what are some examples of discipline tools that might work against this brain development? Because we know we want to support all those neural pathways and connections that are happening. We know that the brain impacts behavior. And so, you know, how, and maybe before we even go to like tools that might have work against brain development, maybe we should just talk about like what discipline is and isn't.
Ah, very good. And I think there's so much confusion about all of that. In my view, discipline is a term that is best applied to adults and not children. Discipline is about how we show up to really embody the root word of discipline, which is disciple. How do we show up to teach our children? And when we can shift the lens of discipline away from the child and onto us, how disciplined are we in our behavior? When we are coming alongside our children who are just 2 or just 3 or just 18 months, how disciplined are we in the way that we show up? And to take that concept and then from there build towards, you know, what does work for kids, what's helpful for brain development and what isn't, really does come down to something called Hebb's Law, which is neurons that fire together, wire together. It's the concept of neuroplasticity, which means that the brain, which is open to external influence and is indeed in the toddler years very amenable to external influence, the more that we repeat the patterns that we would hope become hardwired into that brain, the more likely they are to become hardwired into the brain. And so we want to flex in terms of discipline, how we're behaving. We want to flex in ways that allow for neural pathways to be formed that are for the child and not against.
Yeah. And it's just so, it's so powerful. It's like really cool just to know that, you know, discipline isn't necessarily this idea. I always say it's not something you do to your child. It's something you do with your child, because in the end, we want to support children in learning self-control. And if we're, you know, coming from this place of trying to control them, instead of looking at how are we showing up to support them, if we're coming from this place of how to control them, then, you know, they're always going to be looking for someone outside of them to help control them and to like always be setting the boundaries versus looking for learning how to create that self-control. And so, you know, when we're here to teach, we're teaching those skills of self-control. And that's how I like to think about it. And I love how you like said it's about like how the adult shows up. So really shifting it from the child to the adult.
Mm-hmm. Children will always be perfectly children. And it's about how are we showing up that's going to define the way they grow forward from there.
Yeah. So what are some examples of discipline tools that, you know, really maybe do not support the nurturing of brain development the way that we would hope?
So if we go back to that principle, neurons that fire together, wire together, imagine that your child is in the middle of some kind of moment. So they've just had a no when they wanted a yes. Somebody gets to play with the toy that they were really hoping to play with. They want to go outside or they want to not wear clothes or whatever. And it's not working out for them. We could say at in that moment, their brain is fired up. So they're fired up. Now, if we want to carve out the pathway that is them being calm, which you can imagine coming back down, fired up, they get to settle, fired up, they get to settle. What pathway are we creating in the brain? The pathway for internal self-regulation, the capacity to manage my big emotions on my own. Okay, that's ultimately the goal. And so let's say the child's fired up and we say, this is unacceptable. And we put them on the naughty step. So we separate them. We blame them. We make it be their responsibility. There's no brain bridge existent in that moment. There's nothing happening in that moment that is going to bring that brain back down to a calm, restful kind of state. In fact, we've done quite the opposite. We've separated the child from us, and we know that they need connection in order to be calmed. And we've put a message into their head that our connection with them, which is essential to life for the young child, is conditional. And that they need to shelve their own development in the service of the relationship, or the relationship will not be sustained. Now, that's a heck of a message to put into a small child's brain that ultimately would become a narrative for them through the rest of the life course and impact potentially. And the other thing, Devin, is as people listen to this, they'll be like, oh, snap, I've totally done that with my kids. And now I feel like a terrible parent. Or sometimes people hear me say those things and they're angry with me from a place of defensiveness. And I get that because they feel like, oh, okay, cool. So I put my kid on the naughty step and now they're not going to be able to have a good marriage or a good relationship with somebody down the road. Like, girlfriend, it's a bit of a stretch, right? And the truth is, if you do that a few times, it's probably not going to wreck your kid. A sustained pattern of that over time could, potentially impact in deleterious kinds of ways, and we don't want to dance with fire. So the idea is we make amends for what has happened, we atone, become at one with our children again, we repair it, and then we move forward from there. So that's the long answer. The short answer is anything that involves an element of relational disconnect or separation is working against the brain. Timeouts, removal of privileges, taking things away from your children, and or reward systems.
Yes. And I love to also say in this moment is, as you're saying, like, people are wondering, like, oh my gosh, like, maybe I did this, like, oh my gosh, I'm a bad parent now. And I just want to say, no, this doesn't make you a bad parent. Yeah. And that if this is an unintentional consequence of these types of discipline tools, that no one sets out to say, well, I'm just gonna like break down connection and trust with my child. Like, no one sets out to do that, right? No. And so it's an unintentional consequence. It's not like anyone was out there intentionally trying to do that with these tools. And this is just an invitation to look at something that wasn't so effective and an invitation to explore things that can be more effective in those moments.
I really, you know, and I'm sure you've seen this in your work too, Devin, I am such a believer that everybody everywhere does the very best they can in any given moment. And even if that very best looks maybe from the outside as not their very best, it's their very best in that moment for whatever reason and because of whatever it is that's going on. And Maya Angelou, I believe, is the person who said, when we know better, we do better. And so now we know, and we begin to shift, and we can try on new ideas for size and see what happens.
Yeah. Yes. And that's what this whole conference is about. And all the work that we do out in the world. So what are some examples then of discipline tools that work with brain development?
Yeah. And so the idea here is to first and foremost be human, which means that when our children are struggling, and especially our little toddlers, because of where their brains are at, we really do want to come alongside and meet them exactly where they are. And where they are is they can't regulate their own brain. They really need for us to be there and helping them along with that. And so we want to throw out the window all of the things that have to do with separation and disconnection. Those four things that I talked about, the timeouts, the reward systems, the consequencing, and the removal of privileges. We just toss them all away. And I have this, you know, you have these like light bulb memories of different things. I will always remember this one dad from when I was quite a young psychologist. And I said all of those things to him. And they had a child at the time who was 3 and having meltdowns for 2 or 3 hours at a time, like very significant challenges. And I remember saying to him, so no more of those things. And he was like, wait, what? Like, what do we do now? And so the idea is that you're going to take a step back and you're going to consider the needs of the child and what they require. And I actually came up with 9 different stepping stones. We won't go through them all because we don't want to flood your listeners. But the very first thing is to come alongside with relationship. And so you're not going to respond in that moment to the behavior. You're going to respond in that moment to the relational need of the child. You're really upset. So now I'm hearing them. I'm seeing and hearing them. I got you. I'm right here. So you're moving in with compassion and connection. You can also, as you're doing that, do what I call a flag drop. Flag drops are 5 words or less. So this is not a lecture. This is not a lesson. This is not a teachable moment. There's to be very little talking that's of any kind of substance. And the flag drop might sound like gentle hands. So I'm just letting you know, here's the boundary. You just popped over it when you walloped me in the head or whatever you did. We're going to use our gentle hands. And so I remind you that that's what the expectation is. I'm not fool enough to believe you're going to deliver on it. I mean, you're a toddler whose brain has flipped their lid. You're going to need a little support to deliver on that. And that's why I'm here, which brings me to the next way of flowing into those moments. with kindness and firmness. So this is not about a loosey-goosey flowery meadows approach where we just like erase the expectations and erase the norms and erase the boundaries and erase all of that. We hold on to those things firmly when it's appropriate, and we do it with compassion. And when we're compassionately in charge in those moments, we will find ourselves swooping in, and our primary goal is to kind of narrate the behavior for the child. You're really upset. You've got a lot of big feels. I remember talking to my youngest son, who's to this day, like full of gumption. And I remember saying to him, "You're really frustrated." So he didn't want me to label the feeling. So we switched to, "You're having a big feeling," and he was chill with that. So you'll find whatever voice works for you and works for your child, and you'll just stay present with them. You don't actually need tricks and strategies to make your children behave well. Good behavior is a fruit, and it will come out of the labor of showing up with relationship in the moments when things have gotten tricky for your kids.
Yeah. And it's amazing. You know, I work with a lot of clients one-on-one, and I am never ceased to be amazed at like how powerful connection is, because when there's a lot of parenting tools out there and there's a lot of things that can be supportive, and connection can get us so far. And the reason that it works so well is because connection is tending to the relationship. And I can tell you, I've had countless clients who have just stayed with their child and kept connecting. And, you know, their child's like having a hard time turning off the tablet or doesn't want to go to preschool or take a bath or something like this. And the more that the parent like is just really stays with the connection piece, it's amazing that sometimes we don't need all the other tools in every moment. And yes, sometimes we need the other tools and such, and setting limits and teaching skills and all the other things. And sometimes connection can just get us so far and just dissolve what's already happening. And I think it's just amazing how powerful connection relationship can really be.
Yeah. And I think about that for adults even, and how powerful it is as an adult when somebody connects with you when you're kind of at your worst. You know, if you come home from work and you've had this terrible, no good, very bad, awful kind of day, and you come through the front door and you're grumpy, lumpy, and you're, you know, like not, you're barking about dinner and barking about whatever. And imagine that your partner comes up to you in that moment and is like, "This is unacceptable. Like, go sort yourself out. And when you're ready to be pleasant to the rest of us, you can come back into the family area." Like, this does not inspire calmness. This does not inspire good behavior. In fact, probably because I have a little bit of jump in my stump, that would inspire me to be even more awful as a big person. So now that's me as a big person. Imagine me as a little person in that moment. How much more I get because I'm not feeling connected to. On the other hand, if I came home full of all that same kind of energy and my partner walked up to me and was like, "Oh, it's been a rough day, huh? Listen, go have a bath. I've got dinner. I'm going to do homework with the kids. And I'm going to meet you on the couch with a cup of tea at 9 p.m. I want to hear all about it. And I love you. And we're fine. Go take a minute." Like, you'd immediately melt through the mad into your sad. You would adapt and you would feel understood, which actually would calm you and inspire different behavior down the road.
So true. It's so true. I mean, I think about like, yeah, myself. And I think that when we can create, when we can take ourselves, we can pause for a moment, whether it's in the moment or after the moment, but we can take a moment for reflection and look at what would this look like in another relationship, because parenting is a relationship. And so if we can put it into like a relationship with a spouse or a peer or a coworker, and then look at it through that lens, it can really shed a lot of light into, okay, what about our response may not be supportive and what could we bring into it to make it supportive? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just need to get that bird's eye view, kind of rise out of it a little bit to be able to have some perspective.
Absolutely. I remember the day my first book, Discipline Without Damage, launched, I got a call from my publisher to congratulate me on launch day. And she was very emotional during the call because she said that she had, for the first time, of course, she'd had, you know, the book in front of her several times before that, but for the first time had sat down and read it cover to cover so that all the ideas had linked together. And that was her takeaway message. She said, I just figured something out. We branded this and it's full of the languaging of parents and children and discipline, but this is a book about relationships, and it's, you could change the language and it would fit for husbands and wives, wives and wives and husbands, it would fit for us with our colleagues. I mean, it's just about relationship and how do we show up and be human for each other, and in the case of our conversation, for our children.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you had mentioned repair, right? So if we're talking about discipline that nurtures brain development, and, you know, we're talking about how we have the ability as adults, as parents and caregivers, to influence a child's brain development. And we're also human beings. And sometimes we're going to lose it. Sometimes we're going to have a bad day. Sometimes we're just going to not have any bandwidth. What does this idea of repair or making amends look like from your point of view?
Yeah. And I'm smiling at the thought of the question. I could almost hear it before it came out of your mouth. Because I have a kind of unique point of view on that. And my point of view comes from the idea that there is a hierarchical structure to the parent-child relationship, and not a yucky structure. It's a compassionate structure, where parents are in the lead. We are meant to be there to allow our children to lean in on us and to receive from us the things that they need to go and grow in the best possible way. So parents are in charge, children are not. Parents are the backbone that children lean in on. So when we have a moment as a parent, oftentimes our inclination is to go to our children and offer an apology, and in that also ask for forgiveness. And the challenge is your children don't owe you squat because you're the big person and they're the little person. You're the backbone. They're leaning on you. When you go to them with your needs, you are messing with the hierarchy. You're tilting it the wrong direction. And so I love the idea of repair involving an element of atonement rather than asking for forgiveness. And if you break down the word atonement or atone, it breaks down into at one. Can we become one with each other again? Can we get back into right relationship with each other? And I'm the big person here. I just dropped the ball. I mean, my child is, you know, 2 years old and had a tantrum. So like they almost get like a high five for that because they're just doing their thing, right? And for me as a grown up, I have to be responsible for my behavior and take that on. So the way that it would look and sound is I would approach my child and I would let them know, first of all, I see what I did there and I don't love it. It's over. That yelly shouty business or whatever it was, that's all done. And that I'm really working on not repeating that going forward. And then it finishes with, and no matter what I ever say, think, or do, or what you ever say, think, or do, you and I are golden because you're my kid. I love you to the end of time. There's nothing that will ever get in the way of that. So it begins with, I messed up. I don't love it. I am looking at that and wanting to take that on and better myself. Has nothing to do with you, darling. And we're good. Like you and I, we're so good. And you find a way to make that brief and full of swagger, especially for toddlers, brief, full of swagger. I got you. I love you. We are one. And onwards we go. What about a trip to the playground? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so what about a trip to the playground? And you know, what really stands out that I want to recap for everyone is this idea of unconditional love is like really reassuring your child of your unconditional love, because young children don't really understand that other people's feelings, emotions, and actions aren't about them. Even we have trouble understanding that as adults, that a child's behavior is not about us.
We do.
Right. So you can imagine a toddler with lacking the brain development and life experience. So they don't know that the things happening in their environment are not about them. And so when we reassure them, whether we've just had a moment or just any time throughout the day, the more often we reassure toddlers of our unconditional love and acceptance, the more that that's going to build that strong foundation of the relationship of connection and trust. And I just think that it's something that's not always talked about and it's a little bit underrated. And I think it's probably one of just the simplest things that we can do that adds a lot of value to a child's life.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, it's not like I have it all sorted out over here.
Oh, we're all human.
Exactly. And I like for people to know that, because just because you know it all doesn't mean that you can deliver on it all. The road from the head to the heart is perhaps the longest path any of us will ever travel. And so I'm constantly working to, you know, have my brain knowledge be translated into heart knowledge. And I'm reminded in this moment of a time when my son was not quite three. And I was on the road, ironically, doing a series of about four or five parenting conferences, and my children were traveling with me. We had been to an amusement park the day before, and my son had been coming down the bouncy slide, and his turn was about to be over. And so I was giving him the, you know, two more slides, one more slide kind of countdown, knowing that he would probably struggle with this transition. And when it was his last slide, I scooped him up at the bottom and I was holding him. And I said, that was the last slide. He was not pleased about that. And he immediately bent over and bit my arm, and his teeth like broke skin, top and bottom teeth. And so I got to go to the rest of my parenting conferences with like all this street cred of like this, you know, scabbed up bruised arm. The next day he wasn't feeling so well. And so we were in our little condo that we were staying in, and I was carrying him around on my hip as he was, you know, coughing and not feeling well. And he saw my arm, and he reached out with this little finger and he was stroking where my owie was. And he said to me, "I bit you and you loved me." Oh, see, I can hardly even say it now. He had somehow, in his sweet little, not quite 3-year-old mind, figured out, I can mess it up and my mom's got me, which wasn't like it gave him permission to just chew on me anytime that he felt upset about something. And it was that experience of unconditional love and an internalizing of the message, which is that, like, you are stunning. You are perfect exactly as you are, and we will get through all things together.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that personal example. And it really also just highlights that this way of parenting that's going to nurture brain development, that's based in connection and relationship and trust, still has limits and boundaries, still has teaching skills and all the other things. It's not permissive, but we can have, you know, we can be a teacher, we can be a guide, we can be a leader, and in the arms of unconditional love. And so
That's such a beautiful line, in the arms of unconditional love.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just important to remember. So for parents and caregivers who are like, okay, this has been really illuminating and I really want to work to create some shifts in some of the way that I use discipline in my relationship with my toddler, what would you say is one action step that parents and caregivers can take today when they're done listening to us chat about this that can just move the needle 1% forward for them?
I would say if you can commit to leaving to the sidelines, all those, you know, discipline strategies that you've been using, and just keep the faith that you can walk into the next, the very next moment that you see your child's getting a little wobbly and you see like it's starting to brew and there might be a about something, connect with them. Just work on compassion. Oh, you're really upset. You wanted a yes. I gave you a no. That makes sense to me. Like, just find a way to just stay in the moment with connection and see what happens. And if nothing else, if you can stay open and curious to the potential for what might happen if you stayed with connection, I promise you, you're going to be surprised in the moment at how stunningly well that works. And then you will find yourself taking more steps towards that, going down the road and trying it on for size and figuring out, you know, what in that is working for you, what in that's hard. You might realize as you get going with it, like, oh, actually the hard part about this is it makes me mad when my kid hits me. And then that's on you. And then you're like, oh yeah, I need to work on that. Like, why is that triggering for me? And what do I have to resolve around all of that? So shifting some of the narratives internally, will you shift narratives externally? And 12 months from now, you'll look back and be like, wow, like this is really different in my life right now. That's what we want.
Yeah. I always say, practice makes progress, not perfection. You know, like I grew up hearing like, practice makes perfect, you know, all this thing, like learning piano, all those things, you know, gotta practice, practice makes perfect. Well, actually, practice makes progress. And so we get to try it on for size. As you said, we get to practice, we get to see what about it worked, and we get to focus on multiplying that. And we get to see what about it didn't work for us or our child. And we get to look at, well, what could maybe we could do differently. And so I just like to keep that in mind. So is there anything else that you want to add as we wrap up, or anything we might have forgotten to talk about in terms of discipline that's nurturing a child's brain development?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the final thing that we maybe haven't touched on, although we've alluded to it, that is really important is that we can't grow our children without growing ourselves. And so we have to, you know, grow you to grow them is my motto. And a lot of discipline that's going to work for children, you know, when we shift the lens to what is our discipline and how disciplined are we as grownups, that really is going to be about making sure that you have grown those parts of yourself that maybe are begging to be brought up to the light of day. And your children, mark my words, are going to hand you that opportunity on a silver platter with their behavior on the daily. So you'll have lots of opportunity in being a grown-up for your kids to really grow yourself while you grow them.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And where can everyone go to learn more?
Yeah, so I'm hanging out in lots of different places these days. Dr. Vanessa Lapointe, Dr. Vanessa Lapointe with an E on the end.com is my website. And there you'll find my blog and all of those kinds of things, as well as access to my membership community, where I do Q&As and other kinds of things monthly. I also have lots of webinars that I'm offering every month that people can learn more about through the website. And I'm pretty active on social media. So you can find me on Instagram and Facebook, Dr. Vanessa Lapointe.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for all the work that you're doing in the world to support parents and caregivers and children. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for your bright light out in the world for parents as well.
Thank you so much. And to everyone watching, we will see you again soon. Bye now.